interpret the nonverbal conversation between them, especially when tears spilled from Peabody.
"Please, for God's sake, say yes before we drown in here."
"Please?"
Bella said, and stroked Peabody's damp cheek.
"We'd love to be your tenants."
To Eve's relief, Mavis launched herself at Peabody. Somewhere in the hug, they both began to bounce and Bella to laugh like a maniac. "Great, that's settled. Now I have to get to work."
"Don't you want to see the rest?"
Eve shook her head at Mavis. "I've seen enough. I don't know how or why, but this place is perfect for the five-point-whatever of you," she corrected with a gesture toward Mavis. "Rourke says it's rock solid, so it is. He says you can fix it up in a couple or 3 months, so you can. Between him and McNabb, you'll have the best security there is." Mavis wiped at her eyes.
"I've got a bottle of champagne for everybody but me, Bella, and point whatever."
"Pop it. Enjoy it. We'll come back for another bottle once you exorcise the demon walls. So, congratulations all around. Sincerely." She got out before more tears flooded. Rourke took her hand, kissed it as they walked around to her car.
"Well done, Lieutenant."
"And when did you cop to the big reveal?" "The minute we walked into that science lab of a kitchen. Attached rental space, Mavis and Leonardo beaming with Peabody mooning over tiara moldings. Crown moldings. Whatever." She turned for a last look. "It really will work for all of them." When they got into the car, she looked at him. "And when did you have the idea of Peabody and McNabb as tenants?" "As soon as Mavis and Leonardo fell in love with the place. But I didn't suggest it, and they both came up with it immediately themselves. As you said, a perfect solution." She settled back, started to reach for her PPC, stopped herself. "I'm sorry I had to break up the moment."
"We all had the moment. Now they can bask in it together. But instead of doing whatever's next on your cop list, why don't you take this time to catch me up so I can help if need be? I've already earmarked money stuff for you to look at. And there we are. A perfect solution for us as well."
It kind of was, she thought. She spent the time he drove uptown catching him up on murder. 7. I do know Merritt Cain and his family a bit. I don't know the Huffmans, but know of them. Rourke considered as he wound through traffic. I recall seeing the engagement announcement and hearing a bit of this, a bit of that. I'd like to hear the bits. I'll say it's an open secret. The Huffmans, the elder Huffmans, have an association with natural order. So some of the bits came from surprise Merritt would align himself with that family.
Money often speaks to money.
She shrugged. But my impression was he's in love with her. So that trumps the parents. What do you know about the parents? The Huffmans. They're respected for their medical skills, from what I know, and, of course, for their wealth and position. But liked is a different matter. Where again, from what I know, the Canes are both respected and liked well enough. Then again, from what I recall, the daughter's quite beautiful.
Yeah, she's got the looks. And she's a manipulator, a bone-deep liar.
He glanced over. A murderer? She's involved, one way or the other. In that case, I expect the Canes will take a big step back from her, and this. Including the fiancé.
Rourke braked at a light. I have to go by my impression of him. That's good enough for me.
On the green, he drove on. If Merritt was unaware she was having an affair, male or female doesn't matter, it's the affair at the bottom, he doesn't strike me as the type to say bygones.
Don't know why he would. Added to it, she pulled him right into it, didn't she? By calling him in as her legal rep and lying to him.
Eve shifted to face him. So you agree she lied to him, spun the same story she spun initially to me.
Ah, well, my impression again. No one knows precisely what goes on inside a relationship except those inside it, but my take is yes. She lied to him, has been lying to him, using him basically as her beard. He wouldn't take kindly.
Agreed. But there's more.
Rourke nodded along as she outlined the terms of the trust. Ah, well then, now you have it. She needs to marry to get the money. And with the natural order angle, she has to marry a man, a white male. Better yet, if she conceives a child with him in wedlock, that sews it closed for her.
Right? She does that, she can walk away with everything she believes she's entitled to. Cain would have served his purpose.
I'd like you to look into the trust, make sure of the details, and what kind of money we're talking about.
An entertaining way for me to spend the evening. Will you spend yours trying to suss out how the lovely lying Gwen managed to be in two places at once?
I've backed off from her doing the dirty work personally, but she admits tossing her link, buying a new one. She could have contacted someone who'd do it for her. Meet up, give said unknown subject the keycard, then gone into her apartment. The hard edges of the order believe they're doing the righteous by harming or eliminating those who fall outside their lines. So she's... Eve worked up a teary voice.
I thought she was my friend. Then she assaulted me, tried to... I can't even say. When I refused her, when I fought her off, she said she'd tell Merritt, tell everyone we'd been together, we've been intimate. Please help me. Please don't let her do this.
Rourke glanced at Eve as he turned and drove through the gates.
Well done, Lieutenant. Just the right amount of horror and desperation. She's a stone-cold bitch. Normally, I admire that, but she's the kind of stone-cold bitch who uses people, then discards them.
Like the young, yet-to-be officer, Shelby.
Yeah, like Shelby. And there will be others between her and my victim. I'll find them. I've no doubt.
The last burst of the spring day struck the stone and glass of the house with a fiery flash of light. It flamed in the windows, struck the towers and turrets like torches.
It hits me. 6 years ago, just a handy number, Mavis was doing some gigs at the Blue Squirrel and waiting tables there to pay the rent on an efficiency apartment about the size of the master closet in that place downtown. I was sleeping in a bigger apartment, sure, but not really living there. I mostly lived at Central.
Now I'm living in a freaking castle, and she's going to be living in a big-ass brick house.
Life can have some happy turns.
Yeah. For some of us. Not for Ariel Bird.
They got out of either side, met around the hood.
Think of this, he suggested. Gwen Huffman isn't having a happy turn either.
Good thought. They went in together, where Somerset waited in the grand foyer with the fat cat at his feet.
As you're both late, but unbloodied, I assume you toured Mavis's new home.
He gets to know?
Eve jabbed a finger as the cat trotted over to rub her legs. Bag of Bones gets to know, but I don't.
No one's approval matters as yours does, Somerset said. I assume you didn't disappoint her.
Not only didn't Eve disappoint Mavis, she found exactly the right tone and right words to convince Peabody and McNabb to take the rental. That's a fine thing for all of them. He inclined his head toward Eve.
Well done, Lieutenant.
You'd be right at home there, skulking around the haunted wallpaper, baking in the kitchen from hell. Because she wanted to set up her board, she left the insults there. She tossed the topper over the newel post and started upstairs with the cat bounding up beside her.
Interesting. There's devil's food cake, but I didn't bake it in the kitchen from hell.
That got a laugh out of Rourke as he went upstairs.
Why do they call it devil's food cake? Eve demanded. How does anyone know if the devil eats cake? And if he does, is he only allowed one kind?
I don't think so. I say the devil eats whatever he damn well pleases. Adoring her, Rourke gave her butt a pat.
I can truthfully say I've never given the matter any thought.
Let's raise a glass to the 5-point whatever in their new home. They won't be living there for months.
Regardless.
He walked into her office, straight to the panel that opened to a generous wine rack. Not to play favorites, Galahad gave Rourke's leg a rub before leaping to the sleep chair. He chose a bottle, opened it, then poured two glasses.
"To friends," he said as he handed Eve hers, "who are family."
"Yeah, that's a good one." She tapped her glass to his. "But I still have to work."
"Understood.
Why don't you set up your board, as you won't enjoy a meal until you have? I'll take a look at this trust." "I don't know who set it up. I only have what Shelby told me."
"And what she told you and you told me is enough. Set up your board and book, then we'll have a meal."
She set up her board while he worked in his adjoining office. After circling it a couple of times, making an adjustment or two, she settled into her command center. She opened operations and copied her book to date. She grabbed her link when she saw Baxter on the readout.
"Dallas, what have you got?"
"Shoe envy. Not for the type she's got, but the number. I can tell you shoe hoarder Huffman liked to live and dress in style. Under her clothes, too. A whole bunch of sexies. I believe my esteemed partner developed a permanent blush. She keeps a selection of high-end vibrators, but tucked away from curious eyes. But," he said, just as Eve figured the search hit bust, "we got her link."
"The one she said she ditched?"
"She did ditch it, in her kitchen recycler. It's dinged up, but she didn't run a full cycle, and we got to it before it ran the auto. Still too crunched for us to access anything."
"You need to get that to EDD.
"Already there. Dinged up, like I said, with some bites out of it, but they should be able to get something."
"That's good. That's gold.
What else?" "No drop links. Nothing on her comp or tablet that popped out, but they're in EDD now. The second bedroom's set up as an office, but she clearly doesn't do much in it. Plenty of sparkles in a safe, along with some cash and a safe deposit box key."
"We'll check on that."
Rourke walked in, signaled her to continue as he went into the kitchen.
"It's in evidence. I'm gonna say that she lives cold. You can have the sparkles, the shoes, a closet full of high-end wear and still live cold."
"Cold suits her."
"It must.
But the possible payoff? Tucked away with the vibrators, she had a small unmarked bottle. As it wasn't labeled, it's not prescription or OTC.
Illegals?
That'd be my guess, boss. And since it was tucked with her sex stuff, I'm figuring sex illegals. I didn't want to risk opening it, so we dropped it at the lab.
Good. I'll check on it.
My boy Trueheart's writing out the full report, then we're heading out for a brew. You earned it. Thanks. All in a daze, Dallas. The woman has a good 50 pairs of shoes that haven't been worn. I stand and salute.
That's just sad, Eve said, and cut him off.
She sat back, considering, as Rourke came back with two covered plates. Shoes and vibrators. That stopped him. Sorry. Gwen Huffman's place. Baxter admires her many shoes. Reports she has a collection of vibrators tucked away, and a lot of sexy underwear.
None of that sounds murderous or illegal.
They recovered her old link from her recycler, so once EDD gets inside and recovers, maybe some murderous.
How damaged?
She shrugged. Don't know yet, but maybe they'll recover any communication she made on the way home from Aerial Birds. And Baxter found an unmarked bottle of as-yet-unidentified liquid squirreled away with her sex stuff.
Ah, well then, that may be illegals.
Come, bring the wine you've barely touched and eat. Shelby said Huffman was sexually aggressive, and I'm betting that hasn't changed. Sexy underwear, no surprise. Vibrators, well, a girl's gotta do. But if that's a sex illegal, who's it for? The desk clerks, we checked with all of them, and none recognized Ariel Byrd. She hasn't been to Huffman's apartment.
Perhaps she had yet another lover.
Possible, Eve conceded. She discovered they had roast chicken with some sort of herb stuff, slices of potatoes in a light creamy sauce and more herb stuff, and asparagus. It all smelled pretty damn good. After a bite of chicken, she decided it tasted the same. What if she uses it herself? Men don't get her revved, but she's got this fiancé. He wants some touch, so she needs the substance to get revved to have sex with him.
Well, that would be a sad state of affairs. Pun intended, wouldn't it now?
Then again, the financial payoff's considerable.
How considerable? She poked her fork in the air. You got it already?
It wasn't much of a challenge. As her father stands as trustee and has disinherited his son, the daughter gets the whole pie.
How big's the pie?
When she marries, and it does specify she marries a male, a Caucasian male, an American-born citizen, and one approved by the trustee, she receives 100 million.
Pleased, Eve stabs some chicken. That's a pretty big pie.
Until the time she marries, as specified, she gets much smaller slices of said pie. If and when she conceives and delivers a child within that marriage, she gets another 100 million.
Eve took a small sip of her wine.
It sounds like a really big bribe.
It's precisely that.
Right now, she receives a biannual income from the trust. It's generous, but at 6 million annually, paltry in comparison. And if she doesn't marry by the age of 35, the income is cut off.
So, she comes by her manipulative streak honestly.
And if she deviates from white, male, American, the trust closes down, the income stops. He may be worse than she is, Eve remarked. I haven't done a deep dive on him yet. That's next. Speculate, she invited. Does Merritt Cain know about these terms? Unlikely. As she thought it through, Eve ate some more, took another sip of wine. She's taking big risks. Seeking out at least one lover could cost her that pie, and I'm betting more. A sexually aggressive, self-absorbed woman? A bunch of vibrators isn't going to do it for her. She needs admiration, excitement. She knew about the trust way back when she was a teenager and hooked up with Shelby. The risks are part of the excitement. But she's going to pick lovers outside of her own social pool, her stomping grounds. Why be stupid? So a West Village artist. Yeah, away from the Upper East Side, outside her social strata. She wouldn't want to run into an ex at the next gala. Lots to play with here, she decided, and speared some asparagus. And decided to table murder for a few minutes. How come that house was so dingy and neglected? It's prime real estate. Even I know that. The owners relocated with the in-laws to New Mexico for the warmer, drier climate. Some health issues, and the owner's daughter had moved there with her husband and had children. They'd hoped to keep the property in the family, but their son didn't want it, and lives for several years now in London. So why not sell? Sentiment. They thought to split time between New Mexico and New York, but it simply didn't work. The health issues, the difficulty of the in-laws traveling. In any case, with one thing and another, several years passed, and they finally accepted they had to let it go. So they finally put it on the market. Actually, no. I know the son in London, and he contacted me. He hoped I'd take a look at it and consider buying it, making the necessary fixes, as he'd come out to take a look a few months ago and realized how, well, sad it had become. Mega sad, Eve recalled. What did he think you'd do with it? Sell it or rent it out, which I would have done. The renting out part, as it's too much of a jewel to sell. At least straight off. The only stipulation his parents had was that a family would live in it. He understood that couldn't be legally binding, but he hoped I'd respect their wishes. Now there will be. And now there will be. He topped off his wine, but Eve shook her head when he offered to do the same with hers. I think you'll enjoy this part of it. My acquaintance's mother had some reservations about some performer and fashion designer living in the house where she'd been raised, where she raised her children. Eve's back went straight up. Getting pretty damn picky. Sentiment and family homes. Strong things they are. Mavis tagged her up, had quite the conversation, apparently with Bella chiming in. Needless to say, the woman was completely charmed and is now happy indeed that this family would live in the home she'd loved. There were tears, I'm told, on all sides. One of those, what did you call it? Lovely turns in life. Yes. Eve glanced back at the board. Now I have to get back to an unhappy one. Do you have work? A bit of this and that. If you have time between this and that, do you want to run Huffman's brother? I don't see him in this, but I'm curious about him. More fun for me. Cake? Cake? Shit, I forgot about the cake. Now I'm too full for cake. Later then. No, I've less to do tonight than you. I'll see to the dishes. I owe you.
They rose, and he stepped to her. He brushed his hands through her hair, then skimmed a finger down the narrow dent in her chin.
I'll collect, he said, and kissed her like a man who meant it.
Jan Shelby kept her tiny apartment squared away. Though an organized soul by nature, she essentially lived in one room. More than two things out of place at a time, chaos. She'd inherited her small navy blue convertible sofa from an aunt, her forest green chair from a cousin. She used her mother's ancient kitchen table, and sometimes actually ate a meal there. It had two mismatched chairs she, in a spurt of spatial improvement, painted navy and green. Because it was cheaper and easier than painting the walls, the color of slowly decaying flesh, she hung signs she'd found in thrift shops. Slippery when wet, help wanted, no vacancies. She'd never considered herself a quirky sort, but the signs amused her. Since she had a free evening, she made herself some pasta, cracked a brew, and settled in to read on her tablet while she ate. As far as she was concerned, the sounds of the city banging up to her second-story windows ranked as music. She loved the sounds of New York. Since her unit didn't rate a dishwasher, she washed and dried her dishes, put them away. She was on the point of pulling out her sofa bed, stretching out to spend the rest of the evening watching something fun and easy on screen, when her buzzer sounded. She flipped the switch. Yeah? Oh, Jan, thank God you're home. Buzz me up. Maybe it was small, maybe it was petty, but Shelby went with it. Who is this?
January, it's Gwen, she said.
Oh, and waited two full beats before releasing the street-level door. She went into her skinny bathroom to check out her face in the mirror over the palm-sized sink. Good enough, she decided, especially with the hair. The hair rocked. And a woman was damn well entitled to a little vanity when her first lover paid a call. Maybe she had pulled on her Police Academy sweatshirt in anticipation of this particular visit. A good way to remind everyone just who January Shelby was. She took her time answering the knock, then angled to block Gwen from just strolling in. She'd changed clothes, Shelby noted, into what she calculated Gwen saw as downmarket and friendly. Distressed designer jeans and a silky white t-shirt with a thin leather jacket the color of buttermilk. How'd you find my apartment? Cops' addresses aren't public.
I had to call your cousin Lori. Then she chatted at me for 20 minutes. Aren't you going to ask me in?
Sure. Come on in. Shelby closed the door, giving Gwen a minute, all it took, to look around the apartment. A cheap apartment, cheaply furnished, Shelby thought. But hers.
Isn't this cozy?
Gwen said in a tone that turned the word cozy into two words, a dump.
It works for me. What brings you here, Gwen? Oh, Jan, everything is awful.
The slow, beautiful tears spilled as she pressed fingers to her trembling lips.
That insane Lieutenant Dallas arrested me. I spent hours in a cell because she has some sort of vendetta against me.
Lieutenant Dallas is one of the most, if not the most, respected officers in the NYPSD.
Why? Because she married some filthy rich Irishman?
No. Shelby bit back the vitriol that sprang to her tongue. Not at all.
You don't understand what she's done to me. how she treated me. She ruined my life.
Gwen lurched forward to throw herself into Shelby's arms, a maneuver Shelby blocked by taking Gwen's elbow. She steered her to the chair.
Sit down. I'll get you a glass of water.
God, I don't want water. Do you have anything to drink?
No way she was wasting any of her meager supply of adult beverages.
Water, coffee, off-brand ginger ale.
Never mind, never mind.
Gwen covered her face with her hands.
I need help. I needed to come to someone who knows me, who'd understand.
Understand what? Shelby asked as she took a seat on the sofa.
That I couldn't do all these terrible things. I had to post bail. Oh my God, when it gets out.
What are the charges?
She said I lied during interview.
Did you?
I was afraid. I was in shock.
She dropped her hands, then held them out in a plea.
I barely knew what I was saying.
Is that the only charge?
She trumped up others.
As if they were gnats, Gwen waved them away,
leaving the scene of a crime, destroying evidence.
Did you leave the crime scene?
Jan, I found a dead body. I ran. Anybody would. I was so shocked, I just ran.
And destroying evidence?
I bought a new link. People buy new links all the time and toss their old ones. How is that a crime?
Leaving out the key card, Shelby thought. Shelby frowned, shooting for sober and concerned. Those are pretty serious charges, Gwen. Do you have a lawyer?
Not anymore.
The hand went back to her face.
Merritt, my fiancé, he was representing me. He's broken our engagement. He told me I need to get another lawyer.
Shelby tried switching sober and concerned for sympathetic and hoped she pulled it off. That's rough.
I don't know what to do. Don't know where to turn. That woman, that horrible woman threatened to charge me with Ariel's murder. My God, Jan, my God. You know I couldn't kill anyone.
Who is the victim to you?
She was a friend. And,
straightening, Gwen dashed at tears.
We became close, and she wanted more. I know it was wrong, a mistake. I was unfaithful to Merritt, but I had feelings for her.
You had an affair with her?
We had a relationship. One I believed was harmless, where both of us understood it couldn't be more. But she suddenly demanded more. I told that woman Ariel and I had an argument that night, and I left. I went home. She had my building security feed proving I did, and I stayed home. But she's trying to twist it all up, and now I've lost everything. You know how my parents are. They could cut me off like they did Trace unless I can convince them this is all a terrible mistake. And it is.
If you left and stayed home, I don't see how you left a crime scene.
I went back in the morning, just to talk to her, to Ariel, calmly. That's when I found her. I just ran. I couldn't think. I had to protect myself.
Shelby let her eyes open wide. You didn't report the murder?
I did. After I got home and could think clearly again. And I could hardly tell the police I was in a relationship with Ariel with Merritt right there. I knew he wouldn't understand, that he'd turn away from me. And I was right.
In a gesture Shelby found fascinating, Gwen covered her eyes with the back of her hand. Did she practice in a mirror, Shelby wondered, or was it just innate ability?
We've already sent out the invitations. I have my dress and everything. Now I'm humiliated, and my parents will be furious. You have to help me.
How?
You're with the police. You could do something. Look at the files or whatever and...
And what? You want me to tamper with evidence? Now it was Gwen who waited a couple of beats.
No, of course not. But you're right there, with the police. You'd have access.
She rose to sit on the sofa beside Shelby, took her hand, and her eyes filled with pleading.
Anything you could do. Anything at all. I'd be so grateful. I need someone on my side, Jan. Someone who knows the real me. Someone who knows my heart.
She pressed Shelby's hand to her heart.
I'm so frightened.
She leaned in.
So frightened. I need a friend. I need you. I've missed you. Missed being with you.
Shelby used her hand to nudge Gwen back. I'm seeing someone.
It's only you and me here now. No one has to know.
An instant before Gwen's mouth met hers, Shelby rose.
I'd know.
And since there's nothing I can or would do for you, Gwen, you're insulting us both by trying to trade sex for my integrity.
I need help!
Tears.
Can't you see how desperate I am?
You need a good lawyer. And if you don't want me to add offering sexual favors to a cop for information on an active investigation, you need to leave.
That's it?
The tears in her eyes burned away with temper as Gwen shoved to her feet.
Yeah, I'd say that covers it.
I'd say sorry about your bad luck, but it's clear you brought it on yourself. And you're alive. Someone you claim to have feelings for isn't.
I never had any for you.
I know.
You were never anything but a summer diversion. The dumb bitch from the blue-collar family with the rich uncle with no class who couldn't keep her stupid mouth shut about some careless sex on the beach.
I guess I was dumb to get tangled up with you. But my uncle has more class in his left armpit than you ever will. And I never told anyone about you and me.
Liar!
Of the two of us standing here, I think you're the clear winner of the title. Shelby went to the door, opened it.
Get out. Of this pathetic shithole? My pleasure.
She actually sailed to the door. Shelby didn't think she'd ever seen anyone else pull that description off.
And it was lousy sex.
Now Shelby smiled. Liar, she said, and shut the door in Gwen's face. After deciding she deserved a second brew, she carried her mini-comp from the closet to the table. She wrote it up, all of it, and sent the report to her lieutenant. 8. At her command center, Eve read through Shelby's report. While she digested it, she went into the kitchen, programmed coffee and cake. After she set it up, she went to the doorway. Rourke worked something on his desk screen.
I've got cake. You want it in here or out there?
I'll come to you. And the cake. 2 minutes.
She spent it studying her board.
Ah, at the table, is it? Like the civilized. It looks like really good cake.
She sat, sampled a bite.
I'm wrong. It's not. It's really freaking good cake.
She shoved in another bite.
Gwen Huffman went to Shelby, dug up her address from a cousin of Shelby's. So she made bail.
She did, and though Kane repped her at the bail hearing, he didn't cough up the bail. She did. Considering, she eyed Rourke.
If you got busted and charged, he shot her a warning glance, much like the one he shot Galahad when the cat bellied toward breakfast plates. Hypotheticals can still be insulting. And still, if you did, I'd stand your bail. I'm a cop, but I'd stand your bail.
How beautifully romantic. I, of course, would do the same for you. But he doesn't cough up her bail, and in fact, breaks the engagement.
That tells me it's very unlikely he knew or suspected his bride-to-be was having an affair while she planned the wedding, and your speculation on him hit the mark. You didn't consider him a suspect. His alibi's solid, his background's clean. Gwen, on the other hand, she takes the time to go home after getting sprung and dumped, Rourke added. And dumped, she agreed between bites of cake. Takes time to change her clothes into the more casual, takes the time to dig up Shelby's address, then goes there. Turns on the waterworks, spins a news story, slight variations from what I broke out of her in interview, and a long way from her initial statement. A clever liar molds the tale to her audience. Eve shook her fork at him, then licked it. That's just right. Anyway, she had the affair, but both parties knew it was just sex. Ariel suddenly demanded more, threatened to expose her and blah, blah. She left out details like having and destroying Ariel's keycard copy and claimed she just has an urge for a new link. How I'm a big meanie out to destroy her and help me. She becomes the victim. I half believe she sees herself that way. She went back to the shock, why she left the scene this morning, but added, maybe a slip, that she had to protect herself. Ah, Rourke toasted with his coffee. A moment of truth. How I see it? Merritt's dumped her. Humiliation. Bitch cop. Parents will cut off the money stream. Help, you're a cop, you're right there. You can look at files and so on. A lot of play on that long ago summer. Then she made a move. Lifting an eyebrow, Rourke sipped some coffee. That sort of move? That sort. When Shelby rejected the move, said she was seeing someone, Gwen pushed a little harder. Said nobody has to know. Faithful isn't a word in her particular world. Again, just how I see it. Shelby booted her, and Gwen went from sexy and needy to pissed off, tossed out a few insults and left. One thing more, Eve added. She accused Shelby of talking about their summer fling at that time, so Gwen's parents found out. Shelby maintains she didn't tell anyone. Teenage romance often means other teenagers in the vicinity, doesn't it? It's unlikely it was a locked secret. Why tell the parents? Maybe somebody pissed at one or both of the teenage romancers. The brother springs to mind first, as sibs can get really pissed off. It doesn't actually matter. Eve added with a shrug. I just hate blank spaces. I can't tell you if, at not quite 18, Trace Huffman weaseled on his sister, but I can tell you, from what I've dug into, his relationship with his parents wasn't likely any stronger or closer at that time than it is now. Maybe, maybe not. You don't have to like the authority figure to rat somebody out. People do it with cops all the time. They do, don't they? I found out a bit more on him than your standard run. It happens I know a producer who often uses him in recording sessions. I shouldn't be surprised. Paint me a picture. Talented, steady, though steadier now than he was a few years ago. Illegals or booze? A bit of both. Nothing that kept him from working, but enough to keep him from progressing, you could say. He wanted to play music, write songs,
drifted his way west, where he landed some gigs in Vegas. He's recently hooked up, personally and professionally, with another musician. The producer says she's also talented and steady, and he hopes to produce some of their music before long. So he's getting what he wants. What he doesn't want is any connection to his family, which is why he goes as Trace D. Huff, and in fact has turned down gigs in New York. He told my friend they're toxic, like a poison, and he didn't want to risk them getting into his bloodstream. He took off the day of his 18th birthday, so he tells it, with his guitar, a duffel bag, and the money he'd squirreled away over the previous 6 months by pawning things he felt wouldn't be noticed. His tennis racket, his dress, wrist unit, and so on. So he planned it out. Yes, waiting until that day, as it made him legal, and because, he claims, that night, his parents planned to initiate him into their cult. His term, natural order. He didn't give it a name, according to my friend. He contacted his parents the next day to let them know he was alive and well, then pawned his link so they couldn't track him, stuck out his thumb, and kept riding it on the way west. Yes, Eve thought. Rourke painted a picture very well. He worried they'd come after him. Apparently. So he kept moving for the first 2 or 3 years, until he felt they'd decided disinheriting him was enough. It jibes with what I've dug up on the father. She looked over at the board and Oliver Huffman's photo. Sternly handsome seemed to fit, she thought. Chiseled features, pale gold hair dashed with silver, upthrust chin, chilly blue eyes. The parents keep their connection to natural order as down low as possible, but you don't have to dig too deep to find it. They practically help start it up, along with Stanton Wilkie. A charismatic lunatic. I'll agree on the lunatic. Crazy eyes. She pointed with her fork, then scooped up the last bite of her cake. Some people might look and see, I don't know, holy or empathic, but most every photo I studied today, I see crazy eyes. Cop vision, and yours is very sharp. Huffman Sr. went to hear Wilkie speak when Huffman was in college. He liked what he heard. Huffman had money, Wilkie had, we'll go with charisma, and together they had a vision. A few years later, natural order. Huffman marries Paula Van Dorn, also made of money. I guess you could term them silent partners, or benefactors, or let's just go with cultists. I would, Rourke agreed. By the time Trace Huffman was born, natural order was global, wealthy, secretive, of course, as such things are, but always on the lookout for wealthy or influential initiates. And by then, the Huffmans were well established, had started their clinic here in New York, and were members of East Coast Society. With natural order having a dubious reputation, they don't advertise their membership. Oliver Huffman's rep, however, is one of intolerance. You can see that on his face, Rourke murmured. Yeah, you can, can't you? He's a strict hardliner who's been known to pass on certain patients who don't meet his criteria. He's brilliant, supposedly, at what he does, but he won't treat the mixed race, which cuts out a hell of a lot of patients. That goes for gay and trans, for a female who lists an abortion in her medical records, and so on. Oh, and he's deleted his son from his official ID. I'd say the son is better off. Yeah, me too. Studying the board as she did, Rourke reached over to rub his hand over hers. We had problematic childhoods, you and I, so we recognize others with that same broken foundation. Some build their own, and some don't, Eve shrugged. The mother only works at Mercy 3 days a week. She cut back 10 years ago. A little more digging there? Paula lends her services 2 days a week and half a day on Saturday to the exclusive Eternal Flame Clinic, which is, surprise, owned and operated by Natural Order. Oliver also volunteers there. Rourke frowned. I don't know this clinic. Small, exclusive, as in members only, and in Westport. So in Connecticut, where Wilkie has his headquarters. That I do know about. The compound's largely self-reliant. Its own schools, medical facilities, greenhouses and gardens. And housing, including Wilkie's main residence. More digging? Several Eternal Flame clinics globally in wealthy suburbs. It's a moneymaker, all of this. All legit, at least on the surface. So you wonder, in an organization like this, what's under that surface? And what the careful Huffmans would do to protect that, to protect their reputations, their natural order? As in, dispose of the lover of their daughter, who might expose the affair shortly before the wedding to the son of a respected family. Yeah, that. Especially if they had some hope to rope some of that money and influence into their organization. It's a thought, because somebody sure as hell killed her. And conveniently for Gwen Huffman. Rourke shifted his study from father to daughter. If she hadn't gone back the next morning, if she hadn't reported it, started spinning lies, you wouldn't have connected her. Or not easily. Not with her DNA and prints off record. Even without, I'm going to trace the wine and flowers. Eve pushed up, paced. Yeah, we'd have tracked those back to her eventually. But does the killer know she habitually bought those? Or knowing, think we'd look there? Which means you don't think she's the killer. She didn't use the hammer, but that doesn't mean she isn't the hammer. She's not just connected. She's the reason. Pattern. She walked back to the table, sat, then just pushed up again. She's in trouble, so she contacts her fiancé. He comes running this morning, and he comes to her again after she's arrested. Somebody always takes care of things. But then he doesn't. Right. She can try lying to him about the affair, but it won't hold. He's a lawyer, her lawyer, and he sees the evidence. So he gets her through the bail hearing, then that's it. We're done. Wedding's off. So no clear-cut way to cover now. And bail isn't vindication. He rose as well, walked to her board. He often wondered if he saw what she did. If she goes to her parents, will they cover for her, believe whatever lies she spins? Or will they discard her? She needs somebody to fix it. Eve paused to stand beside him. So she tries Shelby. Summer friendship, summer love, nostalgia, rosy glasses. Rose-colored. Okay, fine. And the cop? Isn't that handy? It's so perfect. She'll lean on that prior connection, weep, beg, play the victim, and warm it up with a little sex. And Shelby doesn't cooperate. What now? She's got to come up with a new plan, Eve said. But go back. Her secret lover doesn't want to be a secret. She wants more than sex when it's convenient for Gwen. Argue, fight, say hard things. Pattern. Someone needs to fix it for her, Rourke finished. Everything's on the line for her, right? She doesn't attack Ariel, not physically, but she's got connections. Connections that should be more than willing to fix her problem. Maybe we can find a communication on her mangled link. Maybe. As she shook her head, Eve hissed out a breath. 9. When she woke, alone, Eve stared up at the fading stars through the sky window over the bed. She lived in a house, she thought, with three males, including the cat, who insisted the day began before dawn. With Rourke undoubtedly in his office, wheeling some deal with somebody on the other side of the planet, and the cat surely gobbling down breakfast served by Somerset, she considered giving sleep another shot. But since her brain had already started to wake enough to think about work, she gave that up. She rolled out of bed, hit the bedroom AC for coffee, then gulped down its precious, life-giving properties on the way to the shower. There, under the hot pulsing spray of multiple jets, she went over her day's crowded and hopefully productive agenda. First up, check the search results. Since EDD would have Gwen's electronics, she'd have them do a cross-match with the contacts. It wouldn't hurt to ask the desk manager at House Royale if any of those names were on Gwen's approved guest list. She stepped out of the shower into the drying tube. As the warm air swirled, she closed her eyes and refined her moves. It was still shy of sunrise when she walked into her closet, sighed. Rourke wasn't there to pick over her choices, and she had to admit that the picking over sometimes made it easier. She went with brown pants that made her think of chocolate, and that made her think of checking on her hidden stash in her office at Central, and made her think, unkindly, of the elusive candy thief. She grabbed a white shirt, always safe in her opinion, then a navy jacket because it had brown buttons, but mostly because it was leather and she was weak. She started to grab brown boots, but saw the navy ones with the chocolate laces. Damn it. She took the navy. By the time she dressed, the sun had started to sneak in the windows. Since neither Rourke nor the cat had made an appearance, she headed to her office. She heard Rourke's voice, that "don't fuck with me" business mogul's voice, so poked ahead through the doorway. "Hold," he said, and paused the transmission. He smiled at her, easy as sunrise. "You're up early, and looking quite put together. I want to look through the search results. Don't want to interrupt, just wanted you to know I was out here. I'm curious, though. Has whoever's on the other end of this pissed themselves yet?" "Possibly." His smile turned to a cold, feral grin. "Well, when you're done scaring the piss out of whoever, I'm in here." She started to go straight to her command center, then stopped and recalculated. If she ordered up breakfast before he did, there would be no possibility of oatmeal or of something sneaky like spinach hiding in an omelet. "Pancakes," she murmured, and made it happen before she got to work. The over 10,000 members stunned her. But then Rourke had, correctly, she thought, included all the boroughs and the near reaches of New Jersey and Connecticut. And, being Rourke, he'd ordered secondary searches. Just New York, just Manhattan, which cut those numbers to just under 6,000 and just over 2, respectively. Too many, she admitted. And as a cop, she shouldn't have been surprised to find so many bigoted nutballs. His search criteria for members in that geographic area with violent records dropped the number down to just over 3,000 for the whole thing and 700 in change for Manhattan. She considered, drummed her fingers. Computer, continue search adding the following filters. First, search for violent crimes against persons. Exclude animals and property. Second, search multiple counts, all violent crimes. Third, multiple counts against persons only. Acknowledged. Working. She sat back with her coffee. She started to swivel to study her board, and Galahad leaped on her counter. Stared deeply with those bicolored eyes. I know you've already eaten, so that won't work. He stepped down into her lap. No more food for you, Tubby. But she scratched his head as the comp announced completion of the first search. Display. Okay, better. By the time Rourke came out, she had the new searches complete. After whoever pissed him, her, themselves, did they offer to pay you to buy their planet? Manufacturing complex, not a planet. And we'll say we came to terms. Breakfast in here, is it? Obviously amenable, he walked to the doors, opened them to the little terrace and the dawn of a May morning. He stood there, looking out, in his pale gray suit, dark blue tie, and shirt that somehow blended both colors. Eve paused her work, gave Galahad another rub before dumping him. She went to Rourke, slipped her arms around him. Now this is a lovely way to start the day. Better than scaring the piss out of people. Even better than that. He tipped her face up, kissed her. I thought you'd sleep longer. Me too. But I woke up, started thinking, and that was that. Gives me a jump. Which you've made use of already. After running a hand down her hair, he turned to the table to pour them both coffee. What did you find in the search? That there are 10,000 and change people who are batshit crazy in the geographical area. Well, now, I expect there are more than that, but I wouldn't say everyone who joined Natural Order is batshit. People seek tribes, he said as they sat. Justifications for their own worldview. Others are deceived or naive or simply weak in some way. And you don't have to be crazy to be bigoted. I'll give you that one. She uncovered her pancakes with considerable pleasure and immediately drowned them in butter and syrup. She dumped the mixed berries she'd ordered over that. Anyway, the numbers narrow some with the other filters, and narrow more with the ones I tried this morning. I'm looking at about 600 names with multiple violent offenses in New York who are current members. Still a considerable number. I'm sending it all to Feeney. They can cross it with contacts on Gwen's comp and address books and all that. If we get any matches, it won't be hundreds. You've considered this murder is a first offense. Or the killer has never been caught before. Yeah, but this is an angle with high probability, so we'll test it out. Plus, I'm hoping I can make her piss herself today and give me a name. If anyone can. And you're going to talk to Merritt. First on the list. As she shoveled in a bite of syrup-soaked pancake, she saw Rourke's gaze track over. She didn't have to turn around to know that cool, steady stare stopped Galahad's pancake advance. I'm having Peabody pick up the bank box key from evidence while I go by Kane's. Then she'll meet me at the bank. Once we see what Gwen's tucked away in it, we'll hit her. Why don't I go with you to Merritt's? I do know him, and he might be more forthcoming with a friend, even a casual one. Don't you have other people to intimidate?
Scores.
He topped off her coffee, then his own. But I've time for this. It couldn't hurt.
You'd be sympathetic.
I am sympathetic. So am I, at this point. But he's still a lawyer, and lawyers tend to shut the doors on cops. So yeah, it couldn't hurt to have you there. If we get anything from Kane, Gwen, the bank box, Peabody and I will follow it up. If not, I think it may be time to have a chat with Stanton Wilkie.
Mind your six there, Lieutenant, he warned her. While he seems to be one who knows how to stay above the fray, he's surrounded by batshit crazies.
She smiled, very much as he had earlier.
I eat them for breakfast.
No doubt drowning in syrup. Still, let me know if you're heading to Connecticut. She shrugged. It won't be until later. I've got a lot to cover this morning.
At least you're fueled for it, he commented as she finished off the pancakes.
I've just got to finish up one thing before we go. He glanced at his wrist unit.
Very early.
That's tactics.
I'll tactically deal with the dishes, then, before the cat tries to reach his goal of licking the pool of syrup on your plate.
When they did head out, Eve let Rourke take the wheel while she consulted her link. Peabody's set to get the key, and McNabb will get started on Gwen's link when they get to Central.
She blew out a breath. She's gonna be full of that house today.
It's a big step for all of them.
Yeah, I know it.
But she'll probably talk me into a brain bleed by the end of shift. I can be happy for her and not want my brain to bleed.
He gave her hand a bolstering pat.
I believe your brain's tougher than that.
We're gonna find out.
He drove across town with traffic so light it seemed